Well, I don't think it's unspiritual to thank people who serve God well in our midst and serve us well in the process. Would you thank this worship team for the incredible work that they do? Thank you, guys. Well, we're going to be in Mark chapter 13, talking about the end of the world, the apocalypse, all that good stuff. And so if you have a Bible or a phone, you could turn there. And as you're turning, I have a quick announcement for us. I want to let you know of something. You're going to hear more about this in the coming month. Can you believe that Christmas is just over a month away? Whoops. Am I okay? Whoop, dip, dip, up. Hey. All right. It's still not right, is it? That's right. Michelle, it's probably a battery or something. If you just bring it down, that's cool. Okay, so Christmas is just about a month away, and I want to make an announcement to you about something that we're going to be doing this year. We're actually going to be taking a very special Christmas offering. It's on Sunday, December 23rd. It's a year-end giving initiative here to increase our impact on people who need Jesus. That may be the voice of God for some of you. And so listen up closely. There are three major objectives for this offering. In fact, we've got a goal of about $30,000 that we'd like to raise that weekend over and above our regular giving. And what we've done is we've lifted out a few initiatives that are in our budget, and we want to throw a spotlight on them, and we want to really give toward those things so that we can establish ourselves and set ourselves for the rest of the year financially. And so these three things could be summarized with three words: reach, grow, and serve. One of those initiatives that we're going to give to is to reach our Haiti partnership. And so many of you know we partner with a church and a school in Haiti, and we're just in the process of really helping that school to be established. And so we've got a bunch of young Haitian children that we have the opportunity to help educate and to help bring the hope and the love of Jesus to them. We also want to have a little bit of a fund there going forward so that we can respond to needs like was there last week. Remember, we showed you some pictures of some of the flooding and the great damage that was being done right where our church is there in Haiti. And we were able to just, the pastors came up with a strategy. They put together a list of food. They've found 50 families that they're going to distribute food toward. Get this, 50 families. They've provided food for 3 months for them to get through this time. Do you know what check we wrote to provide 50 families food for 3 months? $1,000. $1,000. And so we were able to, and it's not much for us, for heaven's sakes. I mean, it's $1,000. But what a life-impacting thing that made on those 50 families and the people that they're going to be able to share with in their community. And so what we're doing is we're kind of undergirding that church to be the heroes, to be the hope of their community, so that when their people in their church have food to share with their neighbors, that the mission of Christ is going to go forward there. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And so we want to be able to have some funding to be able to do stuff like that as needs arise with our partner church in Haiti. The second one is to grow. We want to be able to grow our multi-site video capabilities. Many of you know we have two locations that meet at 9:15 and 11 o'clock. And this morning, as they meet, they're going to be watching the sermon on video. We've chosen to have two video campuses. Everything else is live, but the sermon is on video. We need to continue to improve how we distribute that video to those campuses so that their experience of church can be phenomenal. And so we need to grow that ministry just a little bit more to get us over the hump and to grow our impact there on people that those campuses are reaching. The third is serve, and it's our Serve Erie mobilization. As many of you know, we do a ministry to our community called Serve Erie that impacts many, many people in this community. We've got about 15 churches that are now part of that with us, but we want to continue to lead the way. And so as we can provide needs, goods, services, transportation for people who are going to serve, we want to be able to increase our capacity to do that. And so we're asking everybody at Grace this Christmas season to add these folks that are going to benefit from this offering to your Christmas list this year. And for some of you, I want to challenge you to make your gift on December 23rd the biggest gift that you give this Christmas, because it's going to people who are far from Christ. Okay, so there's the commercial. You'll be hearing a little bit more about that as we head toward Christmas. But today we're in Mark chapter 13. We're in a passage of scripture called the Olivet Discourse. And at the beginning of chapter 13, Jesus is answering his disciples' questions about when these things are going to happen. Remember, the disciples and Jesus are sitting at the temple. They're looking at this incredible structure of the temple. And Jesus is hinting that this temple is coming down, that it's going to be destroyed. And so the disciples are asking him questions. Well, when is this going to happen? What are going to be some of the signs that you're returning, that the end is coming? And so Jesus launches into Mark chapter 13, and he goes down this kind of dual track. And part of what he's saying is warning them about what's going to happen in 70 AD when Jerusalem goes down, because Jerusalem's going to go down in their lifetime. And all of the temple is going to be destroyed. And so he's telling them about that. He's warning them. He's preparing them for that time. But there's also this language in Mark chapter 13 that tells us that Jesus is pointing to something beyond just 70 AD. That he's looking forward to his second coming. And so last week we looked at what are some of the signs for us that are pointing to a more apocalyptic ending to the second coming. And we looked at these six things. We said that there's going to be, in the end times, before Jesus comes back, there's this time called the Great Tribulation. And here are the characteristics of the Great Tribulation, according to Mark 13, that there's going to be growing numbers of spiritual imposters, people claiming to be Jesus, people speaking on behalf of God, that there's going to be increasing global calamities, earthquakes, floods, natural disasters, wars. Third, that there's going to be unparalleled persecution of Christians. Unparalleled persecution of Christians just for being Christians. Fourth, that there's going to be unparalleled defections and betrayals, that family members will actually be selling out family members to death so that they could survive. The fifth is that there will be a rise of this figure called the Antichrist. Someone who will claim to be bringing peace to the earth and will actually bring peace to the earth for a time, but will ultimately bring destruction to the planet. Sixth, that there will be unparalleled violence and suffering during this time. And so last week wasn't an incredibly feel-good sermon, right? We all kind of left very heavy and weighted down a little bit. And so I want to just go from there, and we're going to finish out the chapter today and remind you that this wasn't just information that Jesus was giving. This included commands. It included admonition. Jesus wasn't just telling this to us to scare us. He was giving us advice in the process. He was saying, here's what you should do. Here's what you should be about. And there's these commands that go through all of chapter 13 that go something like this from the mouth of Jesus. He's saying, be on guard. Stay awake. Stay awake, be on guard for my second coming. Be ready, get ready. And here's my concern for us. That the second coming of Jesus is the furthest thing from our minds. My concern for a group like us, and for myself too, is that we think so infrequently about the fact that Jesus is coming back, that we've become complacent about this doctrine, that we've actually forgotten it for the most part. And we just live our lives as if we're just living our lives in the moment. And we have not grasped a concept of the future, where we're headed with all of this, where Christ is headed with his program of redemption in history, that we've forgotten. If I were to call a little three-year-old up onto this stage right now, some of our kids joined us over here earlier. If I was to call a little three-year-old up onto this stage right now and offer them a bag of M&Ms or a $100,000 check to go into an education fund for them, which would that three-year-old choose? The M&Ms, absolutely. In fact, they would probably take a crayon and scribble on the $100,000 check as they were muddying their mouth with the chocolate from the M&Ms, right? That means nothing to them. They have no concept of the future. They just live in the moment, these little kids. No concept of education, no concept of what's coming later. All they can see is right now, yummy M&Ms. And frankly, many of us are living like three-year-olds. We're indulging in the now without thinking about the future. And so I challenge us right at the beginning of this to say, how much do you think about Christ's coming back? Do you long for Jesus to return? Do you pray for his return? This is so important, and here's why. Here's my big idea for today. It's what you believe about the future will have a dramatic impact on how you live now. What you believe about the future will have a dramatic impact on how you live now. This is true in a bunch of areas. Many of you know Kim and I just took a trip to Thailand. Well, when we knew that we were going to Thailand, we kind of knew something about the future. We knew that that date was coming. And when we knew that that date was coming, our job between the time we knew that and the departure date was to get ready. And so we couldn't just show up at the airport and say, hey, we're going to Thailand. What do we do now? No, we had to buy tickets. We had to make sure our passports were in place. We had to make sure our summer clothes were not stored away. I had to make sure I had plenty of hairspray and my loofah and my skinny jeans. And we had to make sure we were ready to go. If you're getting married and you know that that date's coming, you know something about the future. We don't just show up on your wedding day and say, okay, here we are. No, you get ready. There's preparation involved. Knowing something about the future impacts how you live today. And so you get your photographer, and you get your location, and you get the church, and the banquet hall, and the dress, and the tux, and the fly. You know the drill. And so when we know something about the future, it impacts how we live today. And so we're going to ask the question today, how do we live with the end in mind? If we really believe that Jesus is coming back, and I want to say there's 5 times more scripture about Jesus' second coming in the Bible than there is about his first coming. The Bible's pretty clear about this doctrine that Jesus is coming back. And so if we know that to be true, how do we live today with that in mind? How do we get ready? And that's what we're going to tackle. There's some other people tackling this question in these days. I want you to check out this video just for a second. Has anybody seen this show? Doomsday Preppers. It's the number one show in the history of the National Geographic Channel. I didn't even know the National Geographic Channel had a channel, but it's the number one show that's ever been on there. And it's gaining widespread popularity, Doomsday Preppers. And so is that how we get ready? I mean, is that what Jesus has called us to? Is it to collect canned corn and to do emergency drills with our kids and practice them loading guns and buy chickens for eggs and goats for milk in a bomb shelter? And is that what we're supposed to do? Well, I'm thankful for the Bible because Jesus gives us insight on how it is that we prepare for his second coming. And so that's where we're looking today. So we're in Mark 13, verse 28. And look at this little mini parable that Jesus tells. He says, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. So let me pause right there and just give you a few insights about this section. First of all, by the time Mark was written, Jesus had already been gone. He had already ascended for 30 years, and they were waiting diligently for his return. 2,000 years have passed, and he still hasn't returned. And I just want to remind you of this truth, that we have never been closer to the second coming of Christ than we are right at this moment. Nobody in history has been closer to Jesus' second coming as we are right now. Now, and Jesus says, keep your eyes open for the signs. Keep your eyes open. That stuff that we talked about last week. He says, keep your eyes open. Be ready. We should be watching. And he uses this little parable about the fig tree. The fig tree was one of the few trees in the Middle East whose plants lost their leaves in the winter, much like our trees lose their leaves in the winter. There were a few trees that lost their leaves over there, but this was one of them. And so Jesus is standing on the Mount of Olives, giving the Olivet Discourse, and the Mount of Olives has these massive fig trees on it. And so he's pointing to these trees, and he says, I want this tree to be a lesson to you. And they're in early spring as he's giving this message. He says, look at this tree. You see how the leaves are just starting to come out? And we have to imagine, we have to put ourselves a little into the future and imagine springtime. He says, see how these leaves are coming out? Those leaves coming out are the promise that summer's coming. It's the promise that soon, in the middle of summer, May or June sometime, there's going to be figs here, not just leaves, that the fruit is coming. The leaves are just a preview. They're to get you ready. And so imagine springtime in Erie. You know, after that long winter, we're getting ready to head into it. And that first day that you come out the door and the air smells different, you know? Everybody know? The air has a different smell to it. And there's a little warmth in the air. And it does something to you. You see that sunshine for the first time. And you start seeing the little buds of the leaves. Jesus is saying, listen, that you need to be watching for stuff like that. Because when you start seeing stuff like that, it means I'm coming soon. Now, there's an important theological question that we have to answer right here. Because in Jesus' last sentence here in verse 30, he says, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. And we have to ask the question, was Jesus wrong? Because was he saying that his second coming was going to happen before this first generation takes place? Some critical scholars have said, well, that this is proof positive that Jesus was wrong, that he didn't know when he was coming back, and he told them he was coming back during their generation, and then he didn't show up. So was Jesus wrong? I think there's a very clear answer to this question. If we look at the phraseology, even in the original language, remember, Jesus is moving back and forth between this near prophecy in 70 AD and the far prophecy, his ultimate second coming. And when you look at the Greek in this passage where he talks about it, and in back in verses 2 through 4, when the disciples were asking that original question, as they were standing at the temple, Jesus said, the temple's going to be destroyed. And they said, when are these things going to happen? They use this phrase, these things. They use it a couple of times as they're asking the question. And so here we have in verse 30, Jesus comes back to that exact same phrase, and we realize that Jesus is answering the original question of the disciples right here in verse 30. And he's saying, hey, in your generation,